Well, I think there's been a change in resources for a couple of reasons. Number one, the fact that the US and its allies have made progress on the battlefield in Syria, taken back 98% now of the territory that ISIS used to hold, has obviously meant that's obviously hurt ISIS's operational capacity. It's meant they're less likely, less able to be able to carry out external attacks. And as a result, the urgency with which the ISIS problem is being tackled has been reduced, with Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, state actors being prioritized, I think, by this administration over terrorism. However, I do think this is not necessarily what we should expect to see going into 2019. ISIS may have lost its territory, but I think there's no doubt that it's still functions, it still exists, it's retreating to something closer to an insurgency, and of course is still capable of inspiring attacks around the world. You may have noticed that there was an attack in Cologne in Germany just yesterday, inspired by ISIS, that essentially went under the radar. So I still think there's a lot. Terrorism will continue to be a very relevant subject for some years to come.
Robin, does it seem to you, based on some of the recent news that we've heard from the Middle East about the situation involving Iran and some of its proxies, including a situation where there was a list or a group or a meeting in Paris, actually, back in the summer, that we discovered was actually a target for an Iranian government-sponsored terror attack? Does it seem to suggest to you that maybe some of the players might actually change positions in terms of relevance?
Well, yeah, that was an interesting case, because we're certainly used to Iran making trouble across the Middle East and being a state sponsor of terror across the Middle East. A little more unusual to see something actually being planned in the heart of a major European city. So that was a very striking case, the one that you highlight. And I think you're actually seeing that in the way the US administration is handling Iran now and responding to Iran. You may have seen the US counterterrorism strategy that was just published recently. If you compare the focus on Iran in 2018 in that strategy, as opposed to the last counterterrorism strategy, which was 2011, there is a much greater focus on Iran and the potential and the problem caused by Shia militant and terrorist groups. So, we shouldn't assume that the actors are going to remain the same. Sunni and Shia terrorism pose, I think, slightly different sets of problems, but both very pressing problems nonetheless.
Rob Wainwright, the immediate past director of Europol, who left his job office earlier in the summer after his term expired, said, when it comes to Europe specifically, we're not out of the woods yet. It may look as though things are improving, and it may look as though the terrorism picture is calming, but we're not out of the woods yet. And the case you mentioned in Cologne just yesterday on the 16th of October appears to be evidence of that. How do you assess the risk from organizations like ISIS in Europe? What are their skills these days, and what kind of bench do they have, or people should I say available to engage in attacks?
Well, I think that, as you would expect, and certainly as you would hope, the fact that the coalition has been successful in taking ISIS's caliphate in Syria and Iraq has undoubtedly hurt their capacity. They don't find it as easy to be able to execute these external operations on European soil as they did in the 2015-2016 period. But I think you need to look at the ISIS component, which is interesting and important. But if you also just look at the numbers, which European governments are talking about the amount of people they have on their radar that they're concerned about, the UK, 23,000, France, around 20,000, Germany, slightly less, but still a growing number, around 10,000. You are looking at a continent-wide picture where there are potentially up to something like 100,000. I mean, the numbers aren't, of course, completely clear, but certainly tens and tens of thousands of Islamist terror suspects on the radar that governments are concerned about. So that concern is going to exist regardless of whether ISIS has a caliphate or whether it's just an insurgency group, because the method that ISIS, the method of attack that ISIS has put out there, be it anything from suicide bombings to the use of vehicles and knives, the ideology they've put out there, the theological justification for attacks, all these things, I mean, the cat's essentially out of the bag on this now. So I think what Rob Wainwright is exactly right to point out, that even though ISIS's operational capacity has diminished, and that has meant Europe was safer in 2018 than it was in 2017, that isn't the whole picture. And this is something that European security agencies are going to be wrestling with for some time to come.
So the question I'd like to ask you then, in light of that, is the next iteration of ISIS. You know, we saw them essentially explode out of what we knew years ago as Al-Qaeda, and they became something much more lethal than Al-Qaeda. So looking at what we've experienced and what appears to have been neutralized to some degree, the destructive force of ISIS in terms of its so-called caliphate, what can or should we expect to come along next?
Well, I think the natural thing for ISIS to do would be to revert to the roots of the organization, really, which is the insurgency it was born out of in around 2004, 2005 time in Iraq. Iraq seems to me to be a slightly more hospitable terrain for it potentially than Syria, because its roots to Syria aren't as deep as they are to Iraq. So I would expect to see some kind of insurgency activity there. I think that one of the big questions that a lot of people in the CT counterterrorism community are asking is what has happened to the foreign fighters we expected to leave Syria and Iraq as the caliphate fell? Where have they moved to, essentially? Because there's a lot of people who are still unaccounted for. My sense is, and from speaking to various people, it seems to be this is where the kind of consensus is at the moment, is that a lot may be in Turkey laying low. But of course, we know there are other domains that they can shift to: Afghanistan, Libya, Somalia, Yemen. There's plenty of other hotspots that have the potential to take in foreign fighters. But at the moment, I think a lot of people are kind of holding their breath and waiting to see, because to my mind, there's still a lot of unanswered questions as to what has happened to a significant core of ISIS's operations, which we may not know the answer to for some months to come. And of course, at the same time, there's always the question of Al-Qaeda. How does that look in Syria? How does that look in Yemen with various civil wars that are taking place and with various state actors getting involved from Saudi Arabia to Russia? And so I think there's a lot of these kind of unanswered questions are going to resolve themselves in the months to come. And until then, we're just going to kind of be cautious and wait and see what happens.
And finally, Robin, let's talk a minute about innovation. One of the things that these terrorists have proven that they are is innovators, and have proven time and time again that their ingenuity has been able to surprise the West and the world, for that matter, over and over again. So we know about printer cartridge bombs. We know about shoe bombs. We know about underwear bombs. What's on the horizon?
Well, the thing I would probably seek to raise, there was a case, and JJ, we may have even discussed it at the time, in Germany over the summer, where ricin was successfully harnessed. Now, thankfully, the German government, receiving intelligence from an overseas partner, was able to get ahead of that plot and stop that ricin being used in any kind of biological attack. But I think that's one of the areas where it's always been hardest for jihadi groups to be able to pull this off in the West, because it's obviously far harder to plan that kind of attack than it is to just hire a vehicle and mow people down the street. But if we're looking for ways in which jihadi groups may innovate and which they may take advantage of the fact that we can't always access their communications because of encrypted technology, encrypted communications, I do think we need to be aware of this potential chemical, biological threat. I don't think it's the most pressing one, because I think because of the simplicity, hiring vehicles and attacking civilians that way is still the method that I think is going to be most appealing to ISIS and its supporters. But I would encourage us to think about, I think a little bit about the kind of attacks that have almost come off in the past, but ultimately been thwarted, because these groups, as you say, they do innovate. They try and test our defenses all the time, see where there may be vulnerabilities. And as a decent rule of thumb, if we've thought it's a potential vulnerability, then so have they. And so that would be one thing I would say we should keep our eyes on.
Robin Simcox, Margaret Thatcher Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, J.J. Green, WTOP News.